The following is a Prabhupada Lila class given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on October 4th, 2010, in New Delhi, India.
So today, we are blessed with the sweetest essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, this is also a Srimad Bhagavatam class. But there are two types of Bhagavatam. There is the book Bhagavatam, and there is the person Bhagavatam. The person Bhagavatam means he is a living Bhagavatam. His every thought, his every word, and his every deed is Bhagavatam. So today we will study the most powerful, the most magnanimous, the most amazing person, Bhagavatam, that has ever walked on the face of this planet for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. We are meeting chapter called This Remote Corner of the World. Actually, I was serving in that, where Prabhupada made that comment. He came to Gainesville, Florida, a little tiny college town. He said it's a remote corner of the world because it's so far from Mayapur. And that was always amazing, because the Americans are pretty proud of being this so-called center of the world. Prabhupada said, this is a remote place. It's so far from Mayapur. So pick up here. I think maybe if there's a little overlap, it's okay. How many devotees do you have? A reporter asked. Unlimited, Prabhupada said. Some admit and some don't admit. Admit you are a servant of Lord Krishna and your life will be a success. After 2 days in San Francisco, Prabhupada returned to Los Angeles on July 17, flew to Detroit. Bhagavan Das, Prabhupada's governing body secretary for the Midwest, had preached vigorously in his zone, opening centers in St. Louis, Chicago, and other cities. Almost 300 devotees, most of whom who had never seen Prabhupada before, assembled the Detroit airport to receive him. Sureshvara. Devotees had come from all over the Midwestern U.S. and Eastern Canada to greet Srila Prabhupada at Detroit's metro airport. A red and gold throne stood in the center of the reception room, and the devotees were chanting Hare Krishna and dancing, awaiting Prabhupada's arrival. When the plane finally landed, all bliss broke loose. This embarkation, Dali joined the plane, but we couldn't see Srila Prabhupada. I became anxious. When would he enter the room? Suddenly a cry went up and I looked around. Devotees were bowing down. The Rukrama. Srila Prabhupada entered the room as bright as the sun, and everyone immediately prostrated themselves on the floor. Not like the other times that we bowed down together, but this was like an overwhelming force hit us and we were being thrown to our knees. When I stood up, I couldn't believe my eyes. There was Prabhupada. Almost everybody in the room was crying. My first glimpse of Prabhupada was through the lens of my camera, and I thought he looked like he did in his pictures. I'd only seen him in pictures, and now he looked just like the pictures, only moving. All the devotees began to cry and fall to the ground. It was a transcendental, emotional thing. I was looking, watching all the older devotees, how much love they had for Srila Prabhupada, and I was feeling unqualified and sinful. Prabhupada appeared powerful, yet at the same time delicate and soft, like a wonderful flower. As he moved along very slowly, the devotees lined up and made an aisle for him to walk. He walked up to Kirtanananda Maharaj, put a garland around him, and embraced him. Kirtanananda Maharaj was crying tears of ecstasy, and he looked like a little boy next to his father. Then Prabhupada went to Bhagavan and patted him on his head. They even embraced Bhagavan, who also began to weep like a little boy who had just seen his father after a very long time. Vishwakarma, I arrived late. When I got there, I was afraid to look at Srila Prabhupada because I felt too fallen to look upon the pure representative of the Lord. So I stayed behind a wall of devotees, afraid to look. Finally, I realized this is ridiculous, that the perfection of the eyes is to behold the form of Krishna's pure devotee. I raised my head and I saw him sitting on his vyasasana, drinking a cup of water. Never had I seen anyone drink water like that without touching the goblet to the mouth. The water poured from the cup like a shining silver stream straight into Srila Prabhupada's mouth and throat. And he finished the water in a few swallows. He appeared to be like a grand sage from the spiritual realm. And as everyone chanted, he looked around at the devotees, smiling with great pleasure. Everyone was overwhelmed with transcendental joy, and I joined with over half the devotees in weeping. Prabhupada began speaking. This is very satisfactory, that so many devotees, boys and girls, are taking part in this great movement, Krishna consciousness movement. It is a very important movement because it is correcting the human civilization. It is a great defect in the modern civilization. People are accepting this body as the self. And based on this mistake in the foundation, everything is going wrong. Accepting this body as the self is the beginning of all problems. The great philosophers, scientists, theologians, and thoughtful men do not know what is the defect. Recently, I was in Moscow, and I had a nice talk with a professor of Indology, Professor Katovsky. He was speaking that, Swamiji, after this annihilation of this body, everything is finished. So I was astonished that a learned professor, posing himself in a very responsible post, had no idea about the soul and the body, how they are different, how the soul is migrating from one body to another. As Prabhupada spoke, a voice announced over the public address system that the departure lounge had to be cleared for the next flight. They are speaking about ourselves, Prabhupada said. We shall stop. All right? Let us go. Prabhupada was very, you could say, cooperative with the legal authorities. There's another pastime very similar to this. They were in the airport. This is, there were so many devotees there, packed around Prabhupada, that the terminal was totally jammed with devotees. Nobody could pass through. It was a very problematic situation in the airport authorities. There was total, complete congestion in the airport. Nobody could move through that area because it was totally packed with solid devotees. So they were telling the devotees, you should leave here. They're coming to each devotee, you should leave. No devotee, not one devotee would move because they were there with Prabhupada. Finally, they found somebody that looked like a leader, the GBC man, the GBC sannyasi. They said, everyone has to move out of here. There's total congestion. Please ask these devotees to leave. So the sannyasi stood up and he said, all devotees should immediately leave this place. But still nobody would move except for one devotee. Can you guess who that one devotee was? Prabhupada, well, the GBC is ordered. The devotees must leave. So we must... He's thinking, I'm under the GBC. The GBC says we have to leave, then I have to leave. I'm also an ISKCON member. The GBC has announced that all the devotees should leave. I'm one of the devotees. That that evening in the temple room of Detroit, Iskcon Center, Srila Prabhupada sat on his Vyasasan before the deities of Lord Jagannath, Subhadra and Balaram. While a devotee led the kirtan, Prabhupada played his kartals, looking around the room at his disciples. He was nodding his head, pleased to see them dancing and chanting. After the kirtan, he lectured. Just see how their characters are being formed, how they are becoming purified, how their faces are becoming brighter. It is practical. So our request is, take full advantage of the censure. You come here. It is being guided by one of my best disciples, Bhagavan Das. So he and others will help you. Please come regularly to this temple and take advantage of it. After his lecture, Prabhupada asked for questions. Bahulashva raised his hand. Srila Prabhupada, what is the thing that will please you the most? Chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada replied. The devotees spontaneously cried out, Jai! Jai! Prabhupada said, that is the simplest thing. You were chanting, I am very much pleased, that's all. I came to your country to chant so that you would chant also along with me. You are helping me by chanting, so I am pleased. But this tendency is very nice. If you want to please me, that is very good. And to please me is not very difficult. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, under my order, every one of you go preach and become spiritual master. And what is that order? The order is, whomever you meet, you talk to him about Krishna. Prabhupada emphasized that if one wanted to preach and represent Krishna, then he could not change the message of Krishna, but must repeat what Krishna says. I have come here for the first time, Prabhupada continued. But before me, Bhagavan Das, he is organized. And what is his credit? He has presented things that I told him, that's all. This is wonderful. In Los Angeles also, a program is going on very nicely. My disciple in charge there is Karandar. He is present here. He is simply doing what I instruct, and he is doing very nicely, first class. Everyone who comes, they come and they are enchanted with the temple, with the activities of the disciples. So this is the way. This is called Parampara system. Do not concoct. As Prabhupada was leaving the temple that evening, the mother of one of his disciples approached him. You know, she said, these boys actually worship you. Yes, Prabhupada said, that is our system. I am also worshipping my Guru Maharaj. The devotees around Prabhupada looked at one another and smiled. Although the woman had tried to make it appear extraordinary that Prabhupada's disciples worshipped him, Prabhupada had taken it casually. One must worship the Guru. It was the Vaishnava standard and nothing to wonder at. Srila Prabhupada had so many centers in the U.S. that to visit each one was not practical. During his year in India, many new centers had opened. One on the West Coast, Florida, Texas, the Midwest, the East. Prabhupada said he had more establishments than a wealthy businessman and more residences. Were he to stay at each one of his houses equipped, he couldn't visit all of them in a year. And especially the Indian audiences, he would often cite the monthly expenditures for his centers. Though proud of ISKCON's growth, Prabhupada was never proud on his own account. He never considered using ISKCON for his own enjoyment. Whenever he visited a center, his quarters were usually an apartment arranged at the last minute, often fraught with annoyances like noisy neighbors and incompetent cooks. At 75 years, his constant traveling was hardly an arrangement for his health and comfort. Prabhupada never felt complacent over the small success his society enjoyed, nor would he claim the credit for that success. Rather, he said it was due to the mercy of his spiritual master and the previous spiritual masters. ISKCON still had but little influence in the world. people considered it a small, exotic religious sect. But by the blessings of the previous acharyas, it was growing. Prabhupada was initiating more and more disciples, and the potential was unlimited. One of Lord Chaitanya's chief followers, Jiva Goswami, had warned that a spiritual master should not accept many disciples. Many neophyte disciples would bring suffering to the spiritual master. Yet on Prabhupada's U.S. tour during the summer of 1971, he initiated more disciples than ever before. As Lord Chaitanya's empowered representative, he wanted to increase the number of devotees more and more. He was aware of the risk, but he was also aware of the great need. As he had written in the Nectar of Devotion, the one point is that without increasing the number of disciples, there is no propagation of a cult of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sometimes even at risk, a sannyasi in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may accept even a person who is not thoroughly fit to become a disciple. Later on, by the mercy of such a bona fide spiritual master, the disciple is gradually elevated. However, if one increases the number of disciples simply for some prestige or false honor, he will surely fall down in the matter of executing Krishna consciousness. We have seen in our ISKCON, sometimes it happens. Here's an example of our guru. Someone says, how can a guru fall down? But Prabhupada mentions it right here in the Nectar Devotion. It's already there in his books. If a guru takes disciples for prestige, you see, not out of mercy and compassion, he takes it out of a mood of enjoyment instead of a mood of service, you see, then he can fall down. Srila Prabhupada's test of a prospective disciple's readiness for initiation was standard. The candidate must have followed the four rules and chanted 16 rounds daily for at least 6 months and have the recommendation of the temple president and the local GBC secretary. He was easier in those days. Only 6 months, you could get initiated. Prabhupada accepted anyone who fulfilled these conditions, and he expected the disciple to remain sincere and true to the vows of initiation. Despite Prabhupada's growing number of disciples, he intimately touched each one of their hearts. Although a few disciples enjoyed extended association with him, most of his hundreds of disciples saw him only from afar. Yet each of them was certain that Prabhupada was his own. Each could say, my spiritual master. Each could say, Prabhupada, and feel close to their dearest friend in Balgrisha, the one who was saving them from death. I can give you an example. Now, when I joined ISKCON, it was open. Anybody could write Prabhupada if wanted to. It was open. Anybody who wanted to write Prabhupada could write it. Could write it. It's pretty ecstatic. But then right after that, the volume of letters were getting so much, they said, from now on, only GBCs, sannyasis, and temple presidents should write Prabhupada. But I had already written them, I had already gotten a couple of letters from them, and I tell you, I was addicted. And at the risk of being chastised and getting in trouble with the GBC, with even Prabhupada himself, I wrote letters. Because I found that I wasn't sure of having to hear it from the devotee. When I heard it from Prabhupada, then I was sure it was, you know, getting the right instruction. I just wanted to know I was getting the proper instruction. So I had some questions I really felt I had to ask Prabhupada. And I just took the risk and I wrote it. You know, the risk of getting in big trouble, you know. And Prabhupada wrote me back and he said, yes, you should inquire through the temple president, GBC. But then he said, but if there's any urgent matter, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. So now I had my concession from Prabhupada personally given to me. Then I knew that if for routine things you ask the temple president, you ask sannyasis, GBC, senior godbrothers, don't bother Prabhupada. But if there's something you really can't get the satisfactory answer from your GBC, GBC man or your sannyasi, the sannyasi is a temple president, then I had the permission from Prabhupada to write him a letter. I felt, even though there were so many disciples, I was just some rank and file, you know, devotee. I wasn't any, just some rank and file devotee. But still Prabhupada was so kind. He said, if there's any urgent need, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. So in this way, Prabhupada was so personal. And that was true. If any devotee who had an urgent need could approach Srila Prabhupada, even though there was a standard thing that only the leaders would approach, if any individual devotee had that urgent need, Prabhupada would welcome him. Yes, I will help you in your difficulties. So in this way, even though we weren't approaching Prabhupada, we knew that he loved us. Every devotee knew that Prabhupada loves me more than anybody I've ever met or ever could meet anywhere. Prabhupada loves me more than anyone. Because we felt Prabhupada's love for us, therefore we wanted to give whatever little love we could back to Srila Prabhupada. The devotees' love for Prabhupada was not a vague sentiment. He was engaging them in Krishna's service, and they were directly experiencing the transcendental results. Only a devotee, however, could understand Srila Prabhupada's personality or the depth of his disciples' attraction for him or the debt they owed him. No wonder onlookers at the Detroit airport had not understood the apparently delirious devotees in their blissful reception of Srila Prabhupada. Now we go from Detroit over to New York City. New York City, July 19th, 1971. After Detroit, Prabhupada visited Boston and then flew to New York. Actually, when I see this date, I'm pretty excited because within 1 month of this date, from London, Prabhupada wrote me a letter accepting me as his disciple. This is July 19, 1971. And on August 22nd, in London, which is just after this, Prabhupada wrote a letter to me accepting me as his disciple. After Detroit, Prabhupada visited Boston and then flew to New York, where another large group of devotees had gathered. The New York Daily News covered his airport arrival with photos and an article, "Swami, How They Love You." Bhavananda, the New York temple president, had decorated the temple room of the Brooklyn Center with bright colors. Prabhupada's Vyasasana was a special creation of plaids and stripes and checks in fuchsia, lime, black, white, and red. Prabhupada liked it very much. 200 devotees, many having waited for more than a year to be initiated, converged on the Brooklyn temple, and Prabhupada held initiations for 5 consecutive days, initiating about 24 devotees each day. Because Prabhupada, in the ceremony, he would chant on the beads of each disciple right there in the yajna. So, you know, even for 24 devotees, that's 24 rounds. Yeah, 24 rounds. Each day, chanting 24 rounds. One after another, the young men and women would approach Prabhupada and his multicolored Vyasasana to receive their initiation beads and spiritual names. Those receiving the Brahman initiation went one by one to see Prabhupada in his room and receive the Gayatri Mantra, Madhu Mangal. I went to Prabhupada's room and offered obeisances. "Come here," he said. So I went and sat close to him. He began teaching me the Gayatri Mantra, and I was looking up at him. The sun was right behind his head. He looked like a mountain, like the Himalayas, and I was like a mole, a stone. He was very big, and I seemed very insignificant. Riktananda, Prabhupada turned to face me, and his eyes seemed like limitless pools of an entrancing liquid. I knew he was focused always on Krishna, and his eyes were a reflection of that happiness. He said something to me, and I said, "No, sir." Saying "sir" to him seemed natural, and he seemed to be happy that I had said it. Then in a very clear, soft, steady voice, he began to teach me the Gayatri Mantra. Then he took the sacred thread and put it around my neck and across my shoulder very gracefully, and said the Sat petition in his movements. Now he said, you are a Brahmin. So this reminds me of when I also went into the room and got my Brahmins. Prabhupada had one question for me. He said, before he was going to give me the Brahmin initiation, he had one question. He said, so, you're chanting 16 rounds regularly? I said, oh yes, Prabhupada. Actually, I was very scared because I said, this is my one meeting with Prabhupada. I have to record it. And devotees told me, no, it's not proper to record this. Don't do it. But I wanted to have a recording. So I went in there with a cassette player carrying it with me, recording the whole thing. I was scared that Prabhupada would chastise me. But I wanted to have that memory, that tape of Prabhupada meeting with Srila Prabhupada. And so I just took the risk, and Prabhupada didn't say a word about it. It wasn't even mentioned by Srila Prabhupada. But you know how you can't, on the chanting the Gayatri mantra, you chant, you do each mantra 10 times. The first mantra 10 times, the second mantra 10 times. So it was confusing to me. Well, do you go through the whole string of mantras? You do the first mantra once, the second mantra once, and do it 10 times through all the mantras that way, or do you each do each mantra 10 times? And I was so nervous, it was hard for me to get it clear in my head. You know, Prabhupada was telling me how it was, but I was just so nervous that he just showed me. He just demonstrated, Om Bhurvabhasvata, and he just showed me. So I could be very clear. He just demonstrated for me. So it was very clear, and I understood exactly. Do the first mantra 10 times, and the second mantra 10 times, and this way. Prabhupada was so kind. Now, normally, you know, the sannyasi is never alone with a woman, but this was, Prabhupada made an exception. Manajis would get to be alone with Prabhupada too. It was a very special thing for the Manajis. Here's a Manaji explaining. Daivi Shakti. Prabhupada had a Gayatri mantra written on a small piece of paper. And as he was teaching it to me, he had his eyes closed. I repeated word for word after him. When he got to the third line, however, instead of saying Guru Devaya, he said the word from the fifth line. I didn't know whether to follow him or what he had said or just what was on the paper. So I said it was on the paper, and then Prabhupada immediately realized what he had done and changed it. But I suddenly realized that the perfect chanting of the mantras was not so significant. Prabhupada was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna. And although there may have been some apparent flaw in his pronunciation, he was perfect regardless. I saw that the real perfection of devotional service was to follow Prabhupada. After I received my Gayatri mantra, I asked Prabhupada if I'd ask him some questions. And he said, yes. Srila Prabhupada said, I haven't been able to serve you with rapt attention. What can I do to serve you? I was praying that he would give me some special service to do for him personally. Chant Hare Krishna, was all he said. Is there anything more? I am. He said, are you married? I said, yes. So he said, serve your husband. I said, my husband and I don't get along. He said, be a pujari. There are so many things. His answer seemed to solve all my difficulty. First and foremost was to chant Hare Krishna. In addition to that, there are so many other services. If you don't do one of them, then go on to the next one. There are so many things. When he said these words, it relieved all my anxiety. In New York, Prabhupada lectured bravely and authoritatively from Srimad Bhagavatam, stressing surrender to Krishna through surrendering to the Krishna consciousness movement. Unlike any other Bhagavatam lecturer, Prabhupada was able to offer a movement, a society, and a way of life that were fully Krishna conscious and that gave any interested person practical entrance into the devotional service of the Lord. Someone asked how a person who had been very sinful could be relieved of his karma. And Prabhupada replied simply, come and live with us. That's all. Is it very difficult? Our students, they are living with us. You simply come and live with us and you are free from all karma. Is it difficult? Then do that. We shall give you food. We shall give you shelter. We shall give you nice philosophy. If you want to marry, we shall give you a good wife. What more do you want? So come and live with us. That's all. Prabhupada stressed the same point in his lectures. If a person seeking spiritual fulfillment lived and served with the ISKCON devotees, even material fulfillment would come. These Krishna conscious boys and girls in 60 centers, they are living in the best houses, they are eating the best food, they are in the best consciousness, they have got the best hope, everything best. Their feature of body is best. What material happiness do you want more than this? They have got wife, children, happiness, home, everything full. So material happiness is nothing to a Krishna conscious person. Material happiness will roll at his feet saying, please take me, please take me. There is no need of asking for it. Simply be steady and ask Krishna, please engage me in your service. Then your satisfaction will automatically come. Don't bother for material happiness. Oh wow. Now one of my favorite pastimes. My godbrother Nandakishore. If anything's missing from here, I heard the tape, so I'll fill it in if anything's missing from the book. Nandakishore. I think it's probably all here, they got it right off the tape. Nandakishore asked, what happens to a person out on the street if we give him, if we just give him one simply wonderful, or some prasadam, Prabhupada, then it is wonderful. You know what the simply wonderfuls are here? They still call it that in India? You know what are simply wonderfuls? In America, that was the big thing in the old days. We would take powdered milk, powdered sugar, and butter, and make a laddu out of it. Real quick and easy, you don't have to cook it. You just take powdered milk, powdered sugar, and melt some butter. And Vishnu Janmaraj put some strawberries in there to really make it sweet. They were really sweet and they were really heavy, but we give them out on Sankirtan and out on preaching, and devotees loved them. Devotees would come to the temple to eat 20 or 30 of them. I mean, they're really, really good. So, and it was a big staple of our preaching in the old days. Simply wonderful. So Nandakishore is wondering, what happens when we give somebody one of these simply wonderful? Prabhupada said, then it is wonderful. Simply wonderful. And the devotees laugh. He has not tasted such a wonderful sweet in his life. Therefore you give him wonderful. And because he is eating that wonderful sweet, one day he will come to your temple and become wonderful. Therefore it is simply wonderful. So go on distributing this simply wonderful. Your philosophy is simply wonderful. Your prasadam is simply wonderful. You are all simply wonderful. And your Krishna is simply wonderful. The whole process is simply wonderful. Krishna acts wonderfully and it is acting wonderfully. Who can deny it? And Prabhupada said, Kirtanananda said, Prabhupada is simply wonderful. Now what they didn't put in the book is what Prabhupada said after that. And then Prabhupada said, that's all right, have kirtan. So yeah, it's one of the most simply wonderful things. The way Prabhupada went on, you know, just taking the name of that sweet, just see how poetic is Prabhupada. You know? He's the master poet. He's spontaneously making practically a poem about simply wonderful. Just off the top of his head, spontaneously. It's so poetic. You say, how many times he used the word wonderful? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 15 times in a, Prabhupada used the word wonderful in a very beautiful, poetic, attractive way. So this is the quality of a pure devotee. He's a poet. The poetic nature comes out. The more you become Krishna conscious, you become poet naturally. Just imagine, 15 times he used the word wonderful in a very, very wonderful way. While Prabhupada continued in New York, poised to leave for London, in a few days, his secretary mentioned that many U.S. senators were still vying for his presence. Prabhupada casually remarked that if any senator would arrange a good lecture program and pay his travel expenses, plus $1,000, he would go there before leaving for London. Actually, around this time, I also got a letter from Prabhupada. He was offering... it must have been later. No, it must have been a similar situation. No, later on. Yeah, it was later on, that's right. Maybe a little bit later on, the same thing came up. He was offering that if any center that wanted Prabhupada, they could arrange a lecture program, and $1,000, and he would go there. Even if you're a little tiny center, it didn't matter. $1,000 and a good lecture, and he would come. He also wrote a letter to me offering to come to our little tiny Austin center. But anyway, the devotees in Gainesville, they got it together. They get Amarendra Prabhu. He convinced the student body leaders to pay $1,000 for Prabhupada's lecture. It's a lot of money back in 1971. It's a very wonderful story here. So, hearing this, the devotees in Gainesville, Florida, determined to meet Srila Prabhupada's transcendental challenge. The temple president, Sri Dhyananda, assigned an uninitiated devotee, David Lieberman, who became Amarendra, to find a sponsor at the University of Florida willing to pay $1,000 for Prabhupada to come and speak. David visited every student organization on campus until he found a donor. Actually, he chastised them like anything. You pay all these nonsense speakers to come. Dhamarani was very heavy. He used to be an organizer of the anti-war movement Gainesville, rallying thousands of students to protest the Vietnam War. He was a very heavy, powerful person. And he used that shakti to chastise them because they wouldn't read it as being Prabhupada. And then after he chastised them, they turned around and agreed to do it. Prabhupada agreed to come, and even though his secretary informed him the flight would lay over 2 hours in Atlanta and then continue to Jacksonville, a 1.5-hour ride from Gainesville. Atlanta. I feel like jumping forward, but I'm not allowed to do that, to the Gainesville. Atlanta, July 29th, 1971. And 10 residents of the recently opened Atlanta temple arranged to receive Prabhupada during his layover at the Atlanta airport. They prepared a large feast and decorated the Eastern Airlines VIP lounge with fruits, flowers, and garlands. Bill Ogle, this Bill became Balavanta Prabhu. Later on became one of our GBC men. Now he's an attorney. Bill Ogle. Although Srila Prabhupada was not big physically, he immediately captured the consciousness of the entire Atlanta airport when he entered. Everyone was watching as he walked with his head held high and his cane moving gracefully with every step. The airport is one of the busiest in the country, but everyone who saw Prabhupada looked at him in amazement. Airport officials voluntarily began clearing a path for Prabhupada to walk. But what was even more amazing was that he was so submissive to such insignificant disciples as we. Prabhupada entered the VIP lounge with his disciples and about 20 Indian guests. Confronting the portable Vyasa-san sitting atop a marble table, Prabhupada declined. The seat seemed unsteady. But the devotees assured him that it was sturdy, so Prabhupada climbed up, sat down, and began leading a kirtan. After speaking for about 15 minutes, Prabhupada concluded his lecture. This is not sentimental chanting, but it is based on the soundest philosophy, Vedic literature. We have got so many books, and you can buy them in our bookstore. Where is the bookstore? It was a long pause. The devotees have remembered fruits, flowers, the chair, the feast, invitations to the Indians, but they had forgotten Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada continued to wait for an answer to his question until finally a senior devotee, Janmajai, replied, "Prabhupada, we usually have a bookstore." Was all Prabhupada said. After a long silence, "So," Prabhupada said, looking at the audience, "any questions?" Prabhupada chatted with the Indians, asking their names and where they were from in India. Most of them were young men and families, and he treated them respectfully, like a grandfather or a revered Swami. One Indian man, about 35, mentioned he was getting his PhD in biology. "Oh, biology," Prabhupada said. Poor frogs. They dissect the frogs, they kill them in studying. Everyone in the lounge except the biologist burst into laughter. "No, no," the biologist protested, embarrassed. "Why poor frogs?" "Because you were killing," Prabhupada said. "But it is for the advancement of knowledge," said the biologist. "So it is worthwhile. It is for the advancement of knowledge." "All right," said Prabhupada. "If I ask you now, will you give your body for the advancement of knowledge?" Everyone in the room began to laugh. "Yes, yes, I would," the man said. But the more he protested, repeating, "Yes, I would," the more ridiculous he seemed, and the harder everyone laughed. "How many species of life are there?" Prabhupada asked. 50 million, the biologist replied. "Oh," said Prabhupada, you have seen them all?" "No." "How many have you seen?" "Perhaps 5,000. "And you were wrong," Prabhupada said. "There are 8,400,000 species of life. We have scientific knowledge from the Vedas." Bill Ogle. After Prabhupada took prasadam, we performed a play for him. The play was The Brahmin and the Cobbler. I played Vishnu. It was terrible. I had to be Vishnu and my wife had to be Lakshmi. I was lying down as Lord Vishnu. My wife was massaging my feet. Prabhupada was looking at me, and I thought he must be thinking, "Who is this rascal playing Vishnu?" My feeling was, this is not very good. I shouldn't be doing this. He's laying down in front of Prabhupada, having his wife massage his feet right in front of Prabhupada. You know, he feels so embarrassed. I was very embarrassed to be in front of Prabhupada like that. Jayasena was Narada Muni, and he offered obeisances about 100 times throughout the play. Because Prabhupada was there, Jayasena was constantly offering obeisances to everyone and anything. So although he was playing Narada Muni, he offered his obeisances to the cobbler. But some of the Indians spoke up. They were a little taken aback that Narada Muni, such a great saint, was offering obeisances to a cobbler who was ordinarily a very low-class person. So at this point, Prabhupada interrupted and began to explain. "Actually," he said, "it is all right that Narada Muni has offered obeisances to a cobbler because the cobbler is a Vaishnava. Any Vaishnava can receive obeisances more than a Brahmin." He continued narrating the play. He told the story, and we continued acting. Oh, just imagine. Now Prabhupada is telling the story and the devotees are acting it out while he's telling the story. It was ecstatic. Do we have enough time? We can finish the whole book. Just read till the end. Forget eating, sleeping. Let's just stay here and finish the whole book. What do you think? As Prabhupada was leaving the lounge to board his flight for Jacksonville, a lady in a wheelchair, the mother of one of the devotees in Atlanta, raised herself up and threw herself at Prabhupada's feet. With tears in her eyes, she cried out, "I'm dying of cancer! Save me! Save me!" Srila Prabhupada bent down and put his hand on her head. "That is all right," he said. "That is all right." As Prabhupada garlanded with red roses and magnolia, walked down the corridor towards his plane, the devotees thought that Prabhupada appeared majestic, like a king. He emanated a golden effulgence, and he seemed powerful, yet humble. The devotees felt spiritual strength and pledged to follow Prabhupada's teachings. They last glimpsed him walking across the airfield toward the small plane that would take him to Jacksonville. His saffron silk dhoti and kurta blowing in the breeze, he turned to them and waved. Now he arrives in Gainesville, July 29, 1971. Srila Prabhupada asked how fast the car was going and how long would it take to get to Gainesville. Well, they left out when they landed at the airport. Maybe that was when they came back. But the devotees had parked the car where it said no parking. And Prabhupada told them to move the car. He was very law-abiding. So anyway, Prabhupada observed the scenery along the highway, pine forests, marshes, exotic birds, an occasional armadillo foraging near the highway. Who knows what an armadillo is? Anybody know what an armadillo is? It's kind of like a big rat, but it has armor all over it, like a turtle. Kind of like a cross between a big rat and a turtle. Gainesville was a side trip for Prabhupada, a special day of preaching. He had left Shama Sundar, his secretary, in New York, and had brought with him only Aravinda, his servant. He had come for a day to bring the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to yet another city. When the devotees had picked him up at the airport, he appeared grave, but on catching sight of the devotees, he smiled wonderfully. And then turning to Vridananda, he had asked, "Which way?" He was like a tramp little fighter asking to be pointed toward the battle. Prabhupada walked along a flower-sprinkled pathway and into the temple, a rented house near the University of Florida campus. In the temple room, he stood a moment, studying a crude but sincerely executed painting of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. Vridananda asked Prabhupada if he would like to rest, and he nodded. While the devotees performed kirtan, Prabhupada retired to his room, returning later to sit in the large blue velvet vyasasana in the small temple room. In addition to Prabhupada's disciples from Gainesville, Miami, Tallahassee, and New Orleans, many university students and other guests were also present. "It's so nice to see so many young boys and girls here," Srila Prabhupada began, "in this remote corner of the world, so far away from the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya." Prabhupada lectured about the saving grace of chanting the holy name of the Lord. One of his disciples, he said, had been present when his mother was dying. Because he had been telling her about Krishna and Hare Krishna, she said to her son in her last words, "Where is your Krishna? Is he here now?" And then she died. For her uttering the holy name and thinking of Krishna, Prabhupada said she would go to the spiritual world. After Prabhupada finished his talk, a girl reporter from the university newspaper raised her hand. "I see almost all young people here," she said. "Why is that?" Prabhupada replied to the question, "Why are there so many young people in the university?" The girl reflected a moment. "Well, I guess that's the age for education." "Yes," Prabhupada said. "So this is the age for Krishna consciousness. You cannot teach an old dog new tricks." The engagement to which Prabhupada had come and for which the University of Florida was paying $1,000 was to be that afternoon on the campus at the Plaza of the Americas. And when Prabhupada arrived, several hundred devout students were gathered near the temporary stage, sitting casually on the grass, lounging beneath the fragrant magnolia trees. The sky was overcast and rain threatened. As more students gathered, the crowd grew to 500. Then just as Prabhupada was about to speak, a light drizzle began to fall, and Vridananda came on stage to hold an umbrella over Prabhupada. Prabhupada, sitting on his vyasasana, said softly into the microphone, "Someone is smoking." And the students politely extinguished their cigarettes. No sooner did Prabhupada begin his lecture, however, than a dog started yapping. Prabhupada paused. "Who is that dog?" he asked. When the dog persisted, Srila Prabhupada said, "He also wants to talk." Finally, the barking stopped, and so did the rain. But Hridayananda continued to hold the umbrella over Prabhupada's head. While riding in the car back to the temple, Prabhupada asked to hear the tape recording of his lecture. When he heard the dog barking at the beginning of his talk, he laughed. Prabhupada Hridayananda said, "Your lecture was wonderful. Everyone liked it. The students liked it. The devotees liked it. The professors liked it." "All right," Prabhupada said, "Hare Krishna." Srila Prabhupada's day of preaching was not over yet. Next was an evening television interview. The interviewer had done some preparatory reading, and he introduced Srila Prabhupada by first describing who Krishna was, according to Vedic literature, and how Srila Prabhupada was in the disciplic succession from Lord Chaitanya. When the interviewer asked Prabhupada for an introductory statement, Prabhupada explained that Krishna consciousness movement is trying to invoke in all the people the original consciousness that we are a part and parcel of Krishna. When Prabhupada in the interview asked Prabhupada, "Who was your spiritual master?" Prabhupada lowered his head humbly and stated the full name of his Guru Maharaj. Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jagacharja Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. The interviewer, however, seemed bent on controversy. "In what way, sir, may I ask, did you think and do you think right now that the teaching of love of God that you are preaching is different and perhaps better than the teachings of love of God that we were being conducted in this country and have been conducted in the rest of the world for centuries?" Srila Prabhupada, "This teaching is most authorized. That is a fact. We are following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. He is accepted by us, according to the authority of Vedic religion, to be personally Krishna himself. For example, you are the expert in this establishment. If someone is doing something under your guidance, and if you personally teach him, do like this, this is very authorized. So when Lord Chaitanya taught God consciousness, God himself was teaching." Prabhupada had answered positively, avoiding the sectarian dispute the interviewer had invited. Yet repeatedly the interviewer tried to involve him in a controversy. He seemed to want Prabhupada to appear arrogant, sectarian, and anti-American. Prabhupada, however, initially insisted he was not opposed to any other religion, that anyone in the world could chant the name of God as it appeared in his religion. Interviewer, "But there must be an element of dissatisfaction on your part with the way Godhead was being professed in this part of the world before you came. Otherwise there would have been no sense in your being here." Prabhupada, "It is not just in this part of the world. Practically every part of the world has very little interest in God. They have more interest in dog." Prabhupada's answers were strong and philosophically strong. The interviewer, trying his professional best, again attempted to find some fault. Interviewer, "It seems to me, sir, as interpreted in your writings, that there is a very high emphasis placed on the relationship between the individual and God." Srila Prabhupada, "Yes, that is found everywhere." Interviewer, "Yes, but you place more emphasis on that relationship than on the relationship between one individual and another. Am I right in that?" Srila Prabhupada, "We have to establish, first of all, our lost relationship with God. Then we can understand what is our relationship between one individual and another. If the central point is missing, then there is practically no relation. You are an American, and another is an American, and both of you feel American nationality because the center is America. So unless you understand God, you cannot understand who I am, nor can I understand who you are." Interviewer, "I think that in this part of the world, in the Western world, we place a great deal of emphasis on religion in the way it gets one man to deal with another man, the ethic of religion. Now in the Krishna consciousness movement," Srila Prabhupada, "we are not concerned how one man deals with another man." Interviewer, "Isn't that part of your Krishna consciousness movement?" Srila Prabhupada, "No, this is not important. Because we know as soon as one knows how to deal with God, he will automatically deal very nicely with others." Prabhupada, interviewer, "But let's take the Christian religion for an example. You know the Ten Commandments? There is a heavy emphasis in the Ten Commandments on the relationship between one human being and another. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, you know, that sort of thing. Srila Prabhupada. But I say that Jesus Christ never said and never meant that shall not kill refers only to human beings. Where is that evidence? Christ never said like that. Thou shalt not kill refers only to human beings. Thou shalt not kill any animal. Any life? Srila Prabhupada. Any life. That is religion. Interviewer. It has never been interpreted in that way. Srila Prabhupada. You've interpreted it differently. But he said, thou shalt not kill. He never said, thou shalt not kill amongst human beings. Why do you interpret it in that way? Prabhupada had given the TV interviewer the very thing he was after, controversy. Because it was not desirable controversy, the interviewer promptly dropped it. Instead, he asked Prabhupada how one could recognize a true follower of Krishna consciousness by his behavior. He'd be a perfect gentleman, Prabhupada said, that's all. Therefore, I prohibit my disciples to eat meat. The interviewer, to eat meat? Srila Prabhupada, yes. And I prohibit illicit sex life. Therefore, I prohibit intoxication. They do not even smoke. What to speak of other intoxication? I think, am I going overtime? What time did we stop? 9? 9? Okay. All right, I was going to, since the interview is going on, I was talking, I could finish the interview, but it's so much longer now. You can begin it next Akadasi. And you can pick up the interview, the end of the interview, the next Akadasi. So, sometimes we may think, well, how unfortunate I was that I missed all these pastimes of Prabhupada. I was too late. But that is not it. This is the pastimes of Krishna are accessible for everyone. These pastimes of Srila Prabhupada are accessible. Just by reading these wonderful pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, we can experience the full nectar of these transcendental leelas of Srila Prabhupada. And by devoting our lives very sincerely to Srila Prabhupada and his movement, then we can be sure that upon leaving this body and waking up in the spiritual world, that you know who will be there. We will be able to have the darshan of His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. You may say, well, how will I recognize Him? You won't have the old man's body in the spiritual world. How will I even recognize Him? But actually, we will recognize that here is Srila Prabhupada. We'll be able to recognize Him. We'll know fully well, this is my Srila Prabhupada that I dedicated my life to serve His mission. Now I get to be with Him personally and render personal service to Him and get His special loving mercy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.